So when JJ and his team asked me to speak, they said that they wanted me to talk about some above the line stuff. So if you recall what we're talking about, heart, soul, that's below the line, mind, strength, that's above the line. And so today we are going to talk about why as frontline we are eliminating all computers, cell phones, Apple Watches, and we're going straight back to paper. But not this kind of paper. We're going to have to craft our own. So we're going to have some hall teams and we're going to learn about paper making and things like that, making our own ink pens. It's going to be very difficult, but we're going to make the shift together. Amen? Not happening. So everyone who knows me, as I walk up with my iPad to teach a session, knows that's not happening. Actually, yes, I was asked to teach some above the line stuff, but that's kind of not where I've been living. And if you've been asked to teach an all team, sometimes, JJ probably does and his team, they read more books for it. I don't have any bandwidth to read more books right now. And so I had to talk about like where I am, what I'm working on, and I had to draft off of that because we're reading a lot of books all together right now, and I'm in a bit of a thing called an ultra learning reading sprint where you can ask me more about that at some other time because it's kind of interesting. I'm going to try to play a little, so have some ninja moves, I guess, and so I'm going to do some deep work, and then we're going to come out of that and talk about some practical applications of that so that JJ can check the box that Rex did an above the line teaching. Fair? Don't tell on me. Just tell him Rex did it. Today we're going to be talking about this together. And I'm going to try to press on. I wrote a lot about it because it's a topic that I've been very passionate about over the course of the last year. And I think it's been really transformative to the life that I'm living, to the ministry, the ministries that I'm participating in and leading. And I think that it will be helpful for all of you and for the people that you lead to, because every single one of you are leading other people, whether it's someone on this team or it's a group of volunteers that you're pulling in. That's the ask, that we're always multiplying. We're always trying to build our replacement. So someone is being led by you. And the idea is this: why before what? So if you're a note taker, that's the H1. Why before what? And then, like any good author, you ever notice that like books used to just be called a name. And now if the Bible were being written today, it would be the Bible. The condensed stories of the life of Christ. You know what I mean? There's always a subtitle. So the subtitle, because I want to be a famous writer one day, is people follow vision, not rules. So the H1, why before what, right under that in that little italicized font that's kind of tiny and just keeps wrapping on the front of the book. People follow vision, not rules. So I'm going to kick off with the rule that I'm talking about, the why. And it's this, the why of this teaching, because the leaders who shape frontline for the next many years will be the ones who hand their people vision and not just tasks. We're going to learn to say the why before we say the what. So we're going to turn towards strength. We've spent a lot of time this year. We've had a lot of teachers come up, and we've been below the line a whole lot through the course of the year. And I kind of want to turn the other direction, not away from the heart, but I want to turn towards strength. And I want to talk about something, again, that has made me a better leader and you a better leader, too, I believe, if you latch onto this. So I love giving you the main takeaway right from jump. One of my favorite websites, and it's terrible, and you can't tell my wife, and I've said this story before, and you guys have guarded my secret, but I love this website called themoviespoiler.com. Because when I go into a movie, I just want to know, do I need to pay attention? Like, is it going to be any good? I want to know if it ends well. It literally just does the spoiler. Not just the spoiler. Like, it gives you the entire plot line and the spoiler. So I like to teach like that too. For those of you that your attention span starts up here, and by the end of the time that teaching happens, your attention span is down here. So maybe if you carry one thing away from it, I want you to know that very few people follow rules long-term. They follow vision. And leaders who shape what we're doing at Frontline are going to be the ones who learn to say why before what. So we're going to start with some principles in scripture because it's kind of cool to dig into that. Then we're going to get very practical because I want to land somewhere specific. And basically, I want you to have some markers in your week that help you keep the why in front of you, because when we're busy, those fade away really quickly. And I also want to talk about how we then speak to each other in light of the why before the what. So some of you have read a guy named Simon, I'm going to say Sinek, but I did that. Google is just making me so mad nowadays. So I Googled it, and now you know it has that first pop-up screen that you have to dismiss. It's the AI answer. And so the first time it said, it's pronounced Sinek. I was like, I don't know if that's right. I hit refresh to see if I get that dumb thing to go away because I'm old and tech, you know. So I hit it again, and it said it again, but it said, no, you say Sinek. And I was like, oh my gosh. The AI answer kept giving a different answer. So that's my caveat for saying Simon Sinek. There's a question mark at the end of it. But he's in his book, Start With The Why, says this. People don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. People don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. It's a good book. But Sinek didn't invent this. He's not some guy who just pulled that out of nowhere. I believe there's some common grace that he was seeing as he's writing this book. He picked up on something that God had already woven into the way he made us, because God himself is a why first leader. We lead with the why because we follow a God who also led with the why. So let's start with Exodus 20. I'm just going to go through a handful of these. This is the giving of the Ten Commandments, and it's the single most famous list of rules ever known to man, right? The list of rules in human history. And I want you to notice what God says before he says a single command in verse 2. Before you shall have no other gods. Before that, God says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. This is the why. It's the rescue. It's the identity. It's the belonging. Before one rule, God reminds them who he is and what he's done. I am the one who got you out. I am the one who broke your chains. And now on the other side of the rescue, here is how we're going to live together. The why, the what. So God has every right to lead by the rules. He has every right to lead by the rules. Instead, he opens with the gospel of his own deliverance. Grace before law, the rescue before the requirement, who you are before what you do. The commandments aren't the foundation. The rescue is the foundation. And the commandments are how a rescued people keep from going back into slavery. And this isn't a one-off. Let's do some more. This is the architecture of so many parts of the Bible. Look how Paul writes, and we can look at Ephesians. Paul spends three entire chapters telling the church who they are. You're chosen. You're adopted. You are redeemed. You're sealed with the Spirit. You're raised from the dead and seated with Christ. Three chapters and not one command. He's just taking them deeper and deeper and deeper into those waters until they're soaked with it. And then you hit chapter 4, and there's one of the most important words in all of Paul's letter, and it is therefore. Why? Therefore. What? Therefore. I, therefore, prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called. Every command in Ephesians 4, 5, and 6 hangs on that one word. The why comes first, three chapters of it, and then the what. Romans does the same thing. 11 chapters on the mercy of God. And then Romans 12, verse 1. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as living sacrifices. The mercies come first, the appeal comes second, and it's because of the mercies. And Jesus, he led the same way. In the upper room, on the last night, he gives a brand new command. He doesn't say, love one another, here's the rule. He says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You are also to love one another. The command, love one another. But he wraps it around, just as I have loved you. He washes their feet first, then he gives a command. The Great Commission is, all authority has been given to me. Therefore, go. The therefore again. The authority of the risen Christ comes first. The going flows out of that. This is the why. Explain the why. And again, we didn't come up with this in our staff meeting. We didn't whiteboard this out. This is something that we know when we're sitting in the calm, when we're reading scripture, we see it over and over again. And some people are inclined to more naturally lead like that. And some of you are like me. Nuts and bolts. I can follow a rule much longer than a lot of people in this room. Like, I'm a rules guy. I love rules. And I can commit and just stack hands, but it doesn't last forever. Like, it only gets you so far, and a lot of people are much more sensitive to the rule thing than I am. We caught it because it's the way God leads his people, and when we lead with the why, we are imaging the God who rescued us before he even asked anything of us. So, order makes the people, and so there are two ways to get a human to do a thing. Two ways to get a human to do a thing. You can give them a reason, or you can apply some force. Those of you with kids understand what I'm talking about. You can give them a reason, or you can apply force. My dad was really good. Dad, why? Because I said so. You had some parents like that too. Vision or pressure? The why or just the what? And when we lead with the what and skip the why, we can still get behavior modification. People will often do things for a while, and that's exactly what makes this shortcut so tempting. In the short term, you get what you want as a leader. But listen to what we produce. Let's think this through a little bit more. What we produce are people who obey as long as someone is watching. We produce people working right next to each other, but have no idea how their piece connects to anyone else. You just do it, you just do it, you just do it. Now you've got a leader who's like the puppet master and getting all the credit and all the glory, not understanding that there are people who are just kind of following the rules right there. And we produce burnout because a task with no vision behind it is just weight. And weight with no meaning just crushes people. So the Bible has a name for a leader who commands without ever explaining, who multiplies tasks without ever multiplying vision, and his name is Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, make bricks. Pharaoh says, now make bricks, but get your own straw. He never casts vision because to Pharaoh, you are not a son or a daughter. You are a unit of output. And we have different words for the kind of leaders that we want to become in this church. We want to be fathers and mothers. Pharaoh produces slaves who do the minimum until the overseer turns his back. Fathers and mothers produce and develop builders who own the mission like it's their own because you handed it to them like it was their own. Pharaoh runs a factory and just extracts output from people. And we're trying to run a greenhouse that grows people who flourish. This is what we mean when we say power, not force. Force leads with rules and leans heavy on position. Power leads with the why, and it wins over people's hearts. And here's a strength quadrant truth for a guy who most of his life has lived in the strength quadrant. It is not the soft option to lead with your heart and your soul, with the why. It is not the soft option. It's the strong option. It costs more. Yeah. It takes more time. There will be more relational friction. People will have ideas and push on it, and you have to be open to it. But it builds something that's still standing long after you leave the room. Force is fast and brittle. And power is patient and lasts. So I told you we were going to get practical. Let's get practical with this. I want this to be a muscle that you build from repetition. And it's going to take some time. For those of you that are like me, it took me many years. Guys, I'm 50 years old. And I learned this way late in life. Thank you, Charlie. The only people who say it like that are Charlie Hall and my kids. I can't believe you're 50. And it's just because they don't want to believe they're getting as old as they're getting. I don't want you to be just persuaded enough or inspired enough from my talk today that you're excited about it now, but then when you walk out of the room, it's like gone by Thursday. I think we need to have some practical handles that we can hold on to so that this can become more and more a part of our life. So according to Simon Sinek, every communication that goes past one person follows these questions in order. Why, how, what? Why, how, what? The why is the reason you exist, the cause underneath all of it, why anyone should care in the first place. That's the why. The how is the way you will actually do it. The broader moves that you decide to make, the way that you carry the why into the room. And then the what is the thing itself, the task, the service, the product, the part everyone can see. And here's the rule that can make it a discipline. You do not get to say the what until you have said the why. That's my rule. Isn't that funny? I have to make a rule to do the work. But I understand the why behind the rule because I want to do better. Here's the test I use on myself. In the first few sentences of anything that I send out, I try to land one sentence shaped like this: because why we're doing what? The therefore statement. I want to have the therefore statement plugged in. First paragraph. Optimally, the first half of the first paragraph. A way that I help myself do this, because I will just fire things off quickly, is that in every project header that I have in Craft, which is probably the lesson you thought you were going to get today, how to use Craft, in every project header template that I put into Craft, my very first block at the very top is why this is important. I want to see that. I actually, before I even put a task in, I start writing down the why. And a lot of times, it takes me 5 or 10 minutes to get a really solid why behind it. I'm just slow like that. Some people are more naturally inclined to it, but I write that down. The other thing that I really, so that's the first exercise that I love to do. Why are we doing this? I have some really weird projects. I've got one that's updating ministry safe feedback from Miss Norris, who came in a while back. Like, why? Well, yeah, you can think a lot of whys, but then when you take it all the way up to its highest why, because God loves these kids and we want to see them cared for, loved, protected, so that they may hear the gospel, so that their hearts would be opened and saved and enter the waters of baptism. Now, a manual task of going through a handful of documents, which is what we're doing, we're going through like, how many would you say? I don't want to exaggerate. 30, 20? 20, 30 documents, line by line, editing them. It's really easy to say, oh, we just want to update the handbook. That's a lot of people. They probably write that as the why. I want to update the handbook. We want to get the rules and regulations right. But spending time on the why is so important. The other reason I like to do that is because every time I open the project, it's right there at the top, and I read the why again, and I'm like, oh, this is why it's important. There's a lot of projects that are like that that you could probably think of that don't feel important on paper, but when you think about what they actually impact, it's pretty awesome. I do the same thing for every meeting that I'm a part of. I have a meeting template in Craft. I hit the magic button to insert the template, and the top one is, why are we having this meeting? And it helps me drive towards the why every single time. So I was brainstorming, and I thought of an example of one that we likely have run into, an email that we have likely sent before, and I think this will give you a picture of what I'm talking about. So I'm going to give you an announcement written two different ways because it's not subtle once you hear it side by side. Here's what the first version of it says, and you've probably gotten or sent an email just like this. Hi team, starting next month, all volunteers need to check in at the welcome table and wear a lanyard before you step into a room to serve. Please make sure your people know this. Thanks. Not terrible. I mean, I have sent an email, that email or one very much like it, many times. It's just what we're doing now. And this is pure what and how. And volunteers can receive that in a kind of tough way, even if they never say it. Oh, look, one more hoop, one more added thing. Here I am serving on a Sunday, and now I've got to get there a few minutes early to check in, and lanyards are stupid. But here's the same ask written a different way. Because a parent should be able to drop off their kids and know in 2 seconds that every adult in the room belongs there, we're moving to lanyards in a quick check-in prior to starting next month. It's the clearest way we can tell a nervous first-time mom that your child is safe here. Like it's the same email. At the end of the day, a robot would read that and say, same result. But we're not robots. And we receive it different. Now I will gladly go pick up the lanyard because I want a first-time mom to know, hey, we're safe, we're checked in, we're vetted. And there are countless times when we can adjust very simply how we're communicating things in-house and out of house. So When you write an email the first way, it's not a writing problem. A lot of times you'll think that it may be just a way that we're writing it. It's a leadership problem. And as you evaluate it, I'm hoping that you will catch these more and more for you and your team. If the why is not clear to you, it won't be clear to them. And that blank on the why before you fill it in is a real gift because it allows you to focus, hone in on why it's important, and remember why we're even doing this thing in the first place. So check it all the time. Now, we're going to go down one more layer because channels matter too. I've raised one boy and I've got a girl. And if you've got a kid and you ask your kid to clean a room and they go and they do it, but they're just, Bo is the crappiest at it. He may go in there and clean up his room, but he's going to make you know that, yeah, you know what? Watch this. Look at, you know what I mean? Like, he's doing it, but every bit of it just feels wrong, and you just want to yell at him, even though he's doing the thing you've asked him to do. The way he's doing it is terrible. And we can do a similar thing to that when we pick the wrong channel in how we communicate. The way we communicate something is often as important as the what we're communicating in the first place. So before anyone reads a word you wrote, they have to have gotten the message in the correct way that you're sending it. A hard word by text says something that can your actual words can likely never take back. You know, a hard word via text makes it really harder the next time you see someone face to face. So here's a tool. Picture the ways we reach each other and communicate with one another as a ladder, all right? We're putting the ladder on together like this. The heaviest is at the top. That's the face-to-face communication. You got to climb all the way up. There's more work to it. That's the top of the ladder. Then you have the phone call. That's the one, you know, rung or two underneath it. And then you have email. And then all the little side fraudulent emails like Slack and stuff like that. And then you have, really, Slack for me is just email with extra steps. But, and then, you feel that, I'm glad. And then underneath that, right at the very bottom, feet nearly on the ground, is the text message, okay? So, at the top, because the top is where leadership actually happens, it's the face-to-face, it's the most intimate channel we have, no screen can replace it. You can inform people through a screen, you can coordinate through a screen, you cannot really shepherd a heart through a screen, you can't lead people through a phone, you can't lead people through a computer. God didn't lead us from a distance, he came in person, he sat on at tables with us, he put his hands on people as they stepped around him. Leadership has a face. And so when it's heavy, when it's personal, when it touches how a person sees themselves, get out of the chat and get into a room. Walk down the hall, praise in public, and when you have to correct, do it where you can see their eyes and where they can know you're actually there for them, not seeing the naked words that you're about to say. Because how we communicate it means so, so much. The next rung, that's a phone call. And I am really sad that the phone call is becoming like a fossil. Because a phone is really still great. Don't let TikTok tell you anything different. A phone call is still really wonderful. You don't get the eye contact, but you can hear the tone of the voice. You can have some back and forth, the immediate. We normally skip it. Use a phone call when how you say it matters as much as what you say. Tone doesn't survive a text. A voice can carry it, though. A call's also proactive. It's you handing something to someone on purpose instead of sitting back and waiting for their reply. The next rung down is the email. And an email is reactive by design. We're sending it. You're reacting. Action items, documentation, a thing you need an answer on. An email remembers, thank God. I just hit archive, and I can find everything I need for all eternity. It's great. It's a gift, though, and a danger because email is permanent. So remember that. A text feels like it disappears, though, compared to the permanence of an email. Text for me, I mean, it just, if I get, maybe it's because I am 50. I don't know, guys. But if I get a text And I look at it, and then I get like 15 more texts. You might as well have never spoken to me. It's just absolutely gone. If it's past that one screen, I'm sorry, Mom, I loved you. Like, I don't know. Text is great for things like the light and the quick. Hey, there's donuts in the break room. The perennial Ben Hill, I'm 10 minutes late because traffic is bad. And never realizing that traffic is always bad on Central Elder Prayer Days. I kid, I'm joking. A text is convenient, and convenient isn't the same as honoring a person. They vanish, your phone doesn't stack them. Text is a great tool, but it's a lousy vault. So if you want someone to remember something that you said, it's great to just switch over to email. So don't, I hope I can explain this concept well. Don't send weight down a place that cannot hold it. Don't send the weight through a medium that can't handle that weight, where it will very likely break the tool. A text is a fast track, and it fires off the thumb before our slow formed self even has a chance to process it. I don't know what it is about text, but we even say it, fired off a text, you know, like it's just this thing we do. Ping, 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 ping. It's not great a lot of times. I've noticed something about myself that may be inside you too. And sorry about this, Kinsey. I'll fire off a text to someone when I'm feeling tense because I need you to alleviate my tension. And so I'm handing off my anxiety and I'm asking you to carry that anxiety. Is that anyone track with that? Like you feel that at all? I need some relief right now. And I know that I can tell, yeah, it's 9:42, but it's okay because I may not sleep tonight. And you look at it, and it's like, so now I feel this way. I feel this angst and it's late at night and someone can't even do anything about it anyway either. And now I'm just going to go ahead and just place that on them too, so that they can feel it like I feel it. Man, what a lack of trust in God and receiving His grace and understanding that there are hard things that we can carry for 24 hours, for 12 hours, even for 15 hours until we can have the face-to-face conversation. But we want to leave it. Hey, now she knows, so good. I'm fine. I can go to bed now. Now that she understands that I'm upset or he understands that I'm frustrated by this. It's just a crappy way to lead. It's an anxious system, and the channel is the wire that anxiety just, boom, just streams straight from you to that other person. A non-anxious presence can sit in the quiet long enough to either pick up the phone or wait for a day or two. It's okay. And that's the difference between a reaction and a response. A reaction is instant. It's that fired it off. It comes out of our defenses a lot of times. It usually ends in regret. And a lot of unpacking on the back end. A response is slower. You stop. You feel what you feel. You ask God, what the heck is going on inside me right now? You open your journal. You write about it for a minute. It's actually going to probably bring a solution, a conclusion, a way that God's going to help you and heal you, make you whole in a way that actually impacts more than just the conversation you're having right here. When God brings you grace and freedom and deliverance in some of those areas, it's not just that one conversation. It actually impacts how you interact with lots and lots and lots of people. So allow God to do the work in you, because it's not just about that one-off. It's about how you're interacting more broadly with Him and with the world around you. So we cannot have a slow conversation on a fast channel. The one you grab either leaves room for a response or it locks in reactionary back and forth. And I want you to hear me say this too, that I'm not handing you a rule book. I'm trying to just say, use some wisdom. Yeah. And wisdom can read a room. Yeah. Use some wisdom. There's no verse that I could find, and I looked a ton. It didn't even say, thou shalt not correct by text. It's not in the Bible. So let's agree, though, that there are some exceptions. Because, again, I'm not trying to make some rules about it. These are principles. There is some discernment that has to be used, okay? Sometimes text is the missional move. We've all probably had someone in our life like this. Text is the missional move. We are sent people. Jesus came to where we were, and we should go and do the same. And there are people, let's say it's a neighbor, someone you're praying for, or a guy you're praying to know Jesus, who let the phone ring forever and ever and ever when you try to give them a call. But they always respond to a text. Kind of a missional move to just go towards that. We don't have to make them climb our ladder. We can descend the ladder and meet them where they are. The ladder is how we can carry weight inside the family with the person outside of it. And we meet them, whatever channel actually reaches them. And sometimes you're in mid-project. The thing is happening. The project's moving. And there's a small correction you need to make. And the text is just the right tool. You know, on a Sunday morning, there's this big thing I need to say. It's really, really important. I know the weight of it probably needs to be a face-to-face. You can't find the person, you fire off a text. Understood, right? There are plenty of times where it's understood. Criticism, when you're wanting to talk, let's go deep again. Criticism wants a face. Don't fight back with your thumbs. When something is sharp, when it hits your pocket, everything wants to fire back that sharp, faster, meaner, and you're going to lose that fight every single time, and it's going to eat your whole evening up. We've all lived the back and forth through the night when we're trying to be with our family. Here's a little phrase that I love sending out, and there are people in this room who have probably gotten it. I would love to talk about this in person. When would be a good time to meet? That's a big thing. That now, phone down. Hey, this one feels important to me. I want to talk to you. No misunderstandings. Let's go ahead and talk about this in person. If it is super urgent, I will often say, hey, I can make myself available for the next 5 minutes. If it's that important, we can talk on the phone right now. You're raising up to where it needs to be had. Don't make the conversation happen there. So it's not a rule about a tool. It comes to two questions. How heavy is it? And why am I reaching for the channel right now? Is it for them, or am I trying to alleviate something in me? Pick the tool you're going to use on purpose is the ultimate point out of there. So I want to be honest about why this is hard, because this is hard for me. Again, I'm a nuts and bolts guy. I'm a get it done. I want things to be as streamlined as possible, get it done at all costs. Sometimes I can even substitute that the job being done is more important than the wake behind me, and that's not good. That's why this is hard for me. And when something needs to happen, every instinct I have wants to skip straight to, well, here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to fix it. Here's the patch. We're going to, you know, slap that on the side of the boat, stop the leak, and then we'll figure it out on the backside. And I'll use whatever channel is the hottest, the fastest, the quickest to nail down. And we're all busy, but like I said in the beginning, urgency is the great enemy of why. And it's also a great enemy of our presence. The why and the phone call are always the first things that feel cuttable to me when I'm in a hurry. Okay, we don't need that part right now. The phone calls, now I don't have time for that. What if it goes for too long? It turns to its worst case scenario, even though it's something that deserves more than that. You learn at the heart, the 5 seconds it takes to name the why, the 5 minutes it takes to choose the right channel are the most important minutes in the whole exchange that you'll have. So, here we land it. Back to where we started. A why first talk. I'm going to sandwich it. So we're going to go back to the why. We lead with the why, and we choose our channels with care because we follow a God who led with the why and who came in person. He didn't text us from a distance. The word came in flesh. It moved into the neighborhood. The word became flesh. Before he ever told us what to do, he told us who we are and what he had done. Because I have loved you, because I have bought you, because I have carried you out of slavery and made you my own, therefore, everything we ask of our people and everything we'll ever say to each other, we say downstream of everything that God has already done for us. We are a rescued people learning to live like it, and we lead the way that we have been led. So you can't just flip a switch. It's taken me a long time to kind of build this in, and I had to build little signposts along the way, right on a whiteboard. Why? Put it in my project notes. Why? Write it down in my meeting minutes, like right from start before I even walk in the meeting. Why? It took me time. So this week, I want you to take one extra beat, and I want you to find a conversation or two where you were just going the way that you were going. I want you to rewind. I want you to take the extra 5 minutes to define the why. I want you to think about that email you're sending and see if you can't frame it up and put the why in the first or second sentence in the paragraph. And I want you to start building that muscle, because I believe that there's going to be a great reward for that. Like you're going to be able to be a better leader. You're actually leading in a way that's forming people instead of building a list of rules for them to follow. And here's my prayer for you. I wrote this prayer out because I wanted to say these exact words to you. May you be leaders who explain and not just leaders who command. May you be builders and not just hand out tasks. May you reach each other on purpose with presence in a distracted age. And may the why you lead with always trace back every single time to the God who loved you first.